want you to get up now. I want all of you to get up out of your chairs. I want you to get up right now and go to the window, open it, and stick your head out and yell, "I'm as mad as hell, and I'm not going to take this anymore!"
Welcome, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to Monday night, Thanksgiving week, here at the Ed Springsteen Show, brought to you by MVM Radio, home of LouisvillePolitics.com, where you can go for all of the latest investigations, listen to replays of shows, whatever you want to do. I tell you, man, it's going to be an interesting night. I'm not sure if Ed Martin is going to be here or not, first of all. He should be here in a couple of minutes if he can make it. We will find out together. As you know, Ed was having some problems last week with a death in his family of his dog trainer. So we'll see what happens and take it from there. In the meantime, of course, all things always go on around this place. Let's start with Jefferson County because I found this an interesting story that came out over the weekend. But a Jefferson County jury has awarded Louisville couple a little couple, $21.5 million. Jefferson County jury awarded a Louisville couple $21.5 million, basically because they were victimized by a Ponzi scheme by some people who have actually been indicted already in three mortgage cases, and they've been linked, of course, to massage parlor prostitution. We're talking, of course, about New Age Title Company owner Ivan De Leon and Jenna Kaufman. These guys have been in all kinds of trouble already. They had a massage parlor they run a prostitution out of. They're running a Ponzi scheme through New Age Title Company. It's been a big mess, but it was interesting that a Jefferson County jury awarded this couple $21.5 million, basically, because their original mortgage was never paid off like it was supposed to be, and nobody caught it. Welcome, Ed Martin. How are you, sir?
All right, Mr. Springsteen.
I tell you, this is a very interesting. Go ahead.
Oh, I was going to say, I have, as always, I have no idea where you're going with this tonight. So, yeah. But continue. I'm actually picking up on this Ponzi scheme as it goes. I've been slinging flour all day. So,
yeah. It was fascinating. It's fascinating because Jefferson Circuit Court, they awarded punitive damages of $10 million against Wells Fargo Bank, $5 million against New Age Title Company, which these people will never collect on, $6 million against the New Age Title Company real estate attorney, David Moore, who should be disbarred after all of this, and they awarded $500,000 against Forked Bank. Forked Bank is my bank, so I'm kind of paying attention to this closely myself. But essentially, New Age Title Company is a title company that's owned by Ivan De Leon and Jenna Kaufman. And they did a refinancing. They were actually the title company that did the refinance closing on a Thompson home back in 2010. But what they didn't do is they didn't pay off the original mortgage. They wrote the check. They wrote a check to Wells Fargo to pay off the mortgage. But then they put a stop payment on the check. Wells Fargo didn't catch it until after they had already released the original mortgage. And when they contacted Wells Fargo about the bad check, or New Age about the bad check, New Age attorney Moore worked together on a deal to allow them to allow the De Leon and Kaufman to pay the Thompson's monthly mortgage payments for the old loan. But then after 6 months of doing that, their check to Wells Fargo bounced. This thing has been all over the map. It's interesting because of the amount of the verdict. From what I understand, this house is about a $280,000 home, and they got a $21.5 million verdict against all these different entities. And here we have all these homeowners who have been kicked out of their homes due to faulty lending practices and everything else, like your J.P. Morgan Chase's, Bank of America, Wells Fargo, once again, who already entered into an agreement for the federal government for their fraud or for their house, for their home frauds. But you look at all this, these people get a $21.5 million settlement. The government gets billions and billions of dollars in settlements from all these banks. All would have the same thing in common. Now, in this particular case, you know, it was a faulty. They didn't pay off the original mortgage, so you had too many title holders. But at the end of the day, it's all done through shady financing arrangements and behind-the-scenes deals. And millions of Americans have lost their homes and on the street, and they're not getting any of this settlement money. So I thought the amount of this settlement was interesting, particularly because Wells Fargo was in this and all the other things. And then I look at what J.P. Morgan just made, another $13 billion payoff that they always do to the government, you know, for getting caught doing wrongdoing. How much money is it in it for homeowners who have been illegally evicted? If this is a $21.5 million suit, go ahead.
Yeah. Well, I was going to say, you know, it's amazing when you look back at the mortgage settlements, and I think, you know, Jack Conway, Super Jack, you know, he, a lot of people who were illegally foreclosed on and stuff by the mega banks who own the D.C. political class, you know, they get $2,000 and stuff, you know, thanks for nothing, you know, kind of
right.
Deal. And then you see this, and, you know, that I'll be honest, $21 million sounds a little high for, you know, 1,000 times what your mortgage was. I don't know about that, but nonetheless, it just you see Fort Bank getting hit with it, and the others in an individual lawsuit. It kind of and it's not part of the exactly you know the same template that the mortgage fraud and the MERS frauds and the illegal foreclosures and stuff took, but. Yeah, it just shows you. I mean, in case you're ever wondering why J.P. Morgan and a lot of the banks, you know, Bank of America, why they settle with the government is because compared to doing it one case at a time, the government's just a bunch of cheap whores is what they are.
Well,
you know,
that's the truth.
Multiply this $21 million settlement, you know, or even $1 million, or even a $280,000 settlement, whatever. Multiply that times the you know, the tens, if not hundreds of thousands of people who were illegally foreclosed on or otherwise got they didn't switch on their mortgages, something didn't go right, you know, and it dwarfs what these numbers that they, you know, that they parade around from the government are, and it goes to the people who got screwed over.
Well, you know, and I want to make this clear, too, with Forge Bank actually – the only thing they were really guilty of, the reason they had a verdict issued against them, according to the Courier-Journal, was because the jury said that Forge Bank should have had no knowledge about New Age's problems because New Age Title had problems with other closings, with other banks, with refinancing deals and stuff. Forge Bank was actually the mortgage broker. They brought the money to the table, but the title company, as everybody knows who's ever bought a home, they're the ones who handle all the closings and make sure everything is the way it's supposed to be. So Forge Bank was just like, hey, why didn't you do due diligence and use a different title company other than New Age Title because they did not know about the other bad deals. And, of course, Forge is no longer in business with them, obviously. But that's why Forge got off so light with $500,000. It was just a slap on the wrist to wake them up.
I wouldn't even consider that light. I mean, you know, worst-case scenario, throughout all that, it should have been for the amount of the mortgage and not a lot more. I mean, I'm sure there's emotional damage and stuff, but, you know, at some point it comes down to, why was it that high? Obviously, the jury was out to stick a fork in somebody, no pun intended, you know.
Right. Oh, I understand. You know, I got
when you. When you're doing a $21 million cumulative settlement, that jury is, you know, thank you very much for finding the bastards guilty. But
right.
That's a bit much.
Well, essentially what's going to happen is this is going to go up on appeal. We know that. It's already being appealed, I'm sure. And what's going to happen in the appeal is either this price is going to go way down or all the parties involved are going to try to settle for a lower amount. They're not going to get $21.5 million. But it really is amazing to me that, you know, in lieu of all the illegal home foreclosures and everything that were going on in this country, we have an example of one bad title creating such havoc with this jury award. It just makes you really wonder how you can hold these banks accountable, because I think this is an avenue for people who have been defrauded, you know, through these banks and everything else to say, hey, look, these juries are sympathetic, you know, and I think it should be an avenue for attorneys, because one of the biggest problems you have right now is the people that are getting foreclosed on and forced illegally from their homes don't have the benefit of legal advice or legal counsel because they can't afford it. They can't afford it. So I would like to see more attorneys.
In a lot of cases, lazy attorney generals and stuff will negotiate a settlement that, you know, until you divide it by how many people got screwed over, the settlement looks pretty damned impressive, you know, however many billions of dollars or hundreds of
millions.
But, yeah, like I say, when whatever that number was, like $2,300 that people got from the sign, you know, the one Jack Conway signed off, it usually comes with an immunity, and it usually comes with immunity from criminal prosecution. So,
well, actually, most of those settlements, from what I understand,
it does make you wonder if at some point, maybe in all this, in the midst of all this mortgage fraud and every, you know, and title fraud that was going on, where the hell were the attorneys? The attorneys should have swooped in on this like they did the asbestos thing, and just class action these bastards before the attorney generals and Eric Holder and everybody could get together and find a way to protect the mega banks.
Well, and I agree with you, but I think ultimately, you know, the agreements that the attorney generals are making for behalf of all these states, in this particular case, believe it or not, most of these agreements do not give these guys immunity from being able to file a lawsuit on your own. The people that are in the states that are entering these agreements are leaving that off the table. So if you're a homeowner who gets a little bit from the state back on this, you know, you can take that money and hire an attorney and sue these guys on your own. There's nothing preventing that. This is one of those deals that they don't have immunity, which is actually kind of surprising to me because rarely is that the case. But I do wonder, though, when you see a case like this, one thing we know about lawyers, they're greedy. It's all about the money. Now, in this case, one lawyer, Moore, is going to be disbarred. I don't think there's much doubt about that one after all of this. He's the one who actually negotiated a deal between Wells Fargo and New Age Title, which was totally illegal, but he put that deal together himself. So he's got a culpability here, and he's going to go down for it. But a $21.5 million settlement for you know, the Thompsons, the attorney that handles this case for them, typically attorneys are going to get between 20% and a third. So if that's the case, you know, let's say it held up. This attorney's going to get $7 million for this, you know, for a third of it. That should be incentive for a lot of attorneys to go out there and work on a contingency fee, I would think, on behalf of a lot more homeowners than they do. You know what I mean? And that's what I'm really looking for in the big picture here. So I'm hoping it works that way. In the meantime, we do have some other things going on in Kentucky, folks. You know, we've talked so much about Obamacare, so much about Kentucky Next, Steve Beshear's illegal Kentucky Health Exchange. You know, and now we're finding out even more. We've got 11 Kentucky hospitals who are raising a ruckus now because the new insurance policies that Steve Beshear is forcing everybody to take have got such a narrow network of health care providers. Essentially, you're going to be limited to what hospital anywhere else you want to go for treatment. So you got 11 hospitals that are not even going to be allowed to treat people because they're not on Kentucky Healthcare Exchange accepting their underpaid insurance payments. This is really disturbing. You got the Kentucky Department of Insurance involved now. These hospitals have filed complaints with them, but it's basically they're being excluded from plans sold by Anthem, one insurance company in Kentucky. Of course, you've got Aetna and a few others here. You know, Blue Cross, Blue Shield, et cetera. But when you look at this, once again, we're seeing what I call CFC Central when it comes to health care, whether that's in Kentucky or Obamacare, which created this insurance exchange in the first place. Ed, do we need any further proof that a government-run health care is bad?
Well, gosh, I'm going to straddle the fence on this one. Government-run health care is not always bad. Yeah, I'm going to upset some people with that. Other countries do it just fine. The problem we've got is that government-run health care, the only way they can make it work and, you know, and not totally run out of money the way they're doing it, you know, like where they said, no, let's insure the high risk, go on and insert therapy high cost patients at a certain price, a lower price, and you can't refuse them, and you can't you can't do pre-existing conditions. Basically, you're forcing things into the market that would, you know, if left to the free market, would drive, you know, they'd have to be incredibly expensive insurance policies, but they're kind of forcing that down. So there's only a few places you can make it, you know, force the numbers and make it work. One of them is the payout. And, duh, you know, the fact of the matter is if you're taking in X amount of dollars and on the other side of the equation is, you know, you've got to either control the, you know, the individual payouts or you just got to, you got to put maximums on things. You can't just, you know, and that's just a simple math of it. A person can't pay whatever, $750 a year or nothing and have the government subsidize it, but it would be low-cost insurance and then say, okay, well, you know, I've paid whatever. Hell, even call it $10,000 a year.
But when you talk about,
now,
but when you, but when
now,
you talk about all these other places,
I want to go in and get a series of procedures that are going to, you know, going to cost, you know, God forbid, if you find they find a disease, it's going to cost $250,000. It doesn't work, so they have to limit the payouts. You limit the payouts, now the hospitals are looking at you going, hey, dude, we're not going to do this for free. And the doctors are looking at you and saying, oh, no, I'm not doing that for, you know, for that price, no.
Well, wait a minute. Well, that's it. But, I mean, you know, when you talk about other countries are doing it just fine, they're really not. You know, we talk a lot about the Canadian healthcare system. You know, we've got people there waiting a year for a routine surgery. You know, you've got people, I mean, you can forget about elective surgery. I mean, hell, their prime minister comes to the U.S. for his medical treatment because he wants better medical treatment. You know, you're talking about long waits, things like that.
I'm not saying any system is perfect. But I'm just saying our government sold us a bunch of, you know, they sold us a unicorn that eats poop and shit Skittles, and, you know, it doesn't work that way. They're, you know, it's like, oh, you can have this low-cost health insurance, and you get all this. You know, it's going to show up somewhere. It's going to show up in the deductible. People just, the government is so full of crap sometimes, and the bureaucrats are so full of crap. They can sit there and say, oh, well, we can do this insurance for cheap, you know, do it on the cheap. Costs are going to go down. Access is going to go. No, there's simple supply and demand that they have. They need a lot of water and water, or just otherwise oblivious to, and now they're having to face it. Yeah, the hospitals are looking at it going, I got your supply and demand right here, big boy. You know, it's like, that's what it is. It's like, if you're going to make this work, the government on one side of the ledger looks and says, well, and the insurance companies say, well, this is only going to work if we, you know, we pay out this much. And the hospitals are saying, hey, guess what? You know, we should have a health car initiative where everybody should be able to buy the car of their choice for $12,000. Yeah? The only problem is the Mercedes dealers aren't going to play along with you on that one.
Ed, you know, you're starting to scare me with the way you're thinking, because I would totally disagree with that. I believe in a free market, period. You know, the thing for me right now is when we look at healthcare, you know, the problem is this. When you look at the countries like Canada and the UK and other people who have all this socialized healthcare and everything else, you know, they are not getting top quality healthcare. They're not. You know, you're having long waits for routine surgeries. You know, you might be getting free medicine on occasion, but you still have to suffer, you know, which is increasing the cost of that health care. you know, there's all kinds of things here. And but my thing is this, you know, for all the people that this was supposed to help, it's not helping anybody. As we talked about last week, and I know you're off, but as I talked about last week, even right here in Kentucky, we've got 280,000 Kentuckians who have already received their cancellation notices, and now Kentucky Next is going to try to fix the individual Band-Aid crap that Obamacare screwed up on a federal level. They're going to try to fix it on a state level, but it's only going to help 4,797 people out of 280,000. So I'm trying to find somebody who can give me a definitive argument that tells me how good Obamacare is, because for every person that is going to receive health insurance now, it's going to be unaffordable. The deductibles are too high. But for every person that's going to receive it, five people are going to lose it. So, you know, it's a net loss, no matter which way you look at it, for a substandard care program. And Kentucky is no different. So it's really interesting to me when I look at that dynamic, you know, and I'm just not understanding it. I'm really not. And I hope David Adams, his case is still ongoing, and I think he's expecting to know something this week, and as soon as he does, we're going to bring him back on air to talk about it. But, you know, it's really disturbing, because I look at all of this stuff going on. You're having hospitals that are being told, sorry, you're not going to be able to see patients from us because, you know, we're not going to pay you enough money to cover your overhead. And that's literally what's going on. We've got all kinds of reports around the country of all doctors leaving the field because they can't afford to practice medicine. Everybody thinks every doctor out there is making six-figure salaries and stuff, high six-figure salaries and seven-figure salaries every year. They're wrong. Your regular doctor doesn't make that kind of money. You know, and when you look at insurance companies, and here's another rub for me, because my own insurance, okay, they get billed $65 for an office visit is what my office, my doctor's office bills insurance companies, $65 for an office visit. All right. Now, the negotiated price of the insurance company.
I'd charge more to have to put up with you, but.
Well, I understand that. I would too. I would too. But here's the thing. That's the suggested retail price, if you will, for everybody who goes off of that crap, which is not a bait and switch. So the suggested office visit charge is $65. The negotiated charge that's agreed on between them and Humana is $35. So they're going to pay $35 of what they've agreed to take from Humana. But out of that $35, guess what? Ed has a $35 copay every time he goes to his primary care physician. So their agreed price is $35 with Humana. I'm paying the $35 copay. Humana is paying a zero in this transaction, unless, of course, you get into testing and drawing blood and things like that. And then I've got a deductible that has to be met before they pick up on that. I'm a guy at 50 years old. It goes to the doctor once a year because they make him come in. I don't go to the doctor when I'm sick. I can't stand the doctors. I've been in too many hospitals having surgeries for injuries. I don't ever want to see another hospital. So I'm a guy that doesn't go to these places on a regular basis. I'll go once a year because they make me come in. They draw blood once a year because they want to check my levels, because they have to check my liver enzymes for a medical problem. And they won't renew my medicine without seeing them once a year. It's that simple. So I pay for the office visit. I pay for the blood, lab work, and everything else because of the deductible we've got. Humana pays nothing. And my wife's employer, who I'm insured through, pays the premium. I'm fortunate in that regard because I don't have to pay the premium. But it's still costing that company, for the family plan, for me and my wife, a little over $450 a month for that insurance plan, and my wife goes to the doctor less than I do. So our insurance companies, for the most part, at best, are paying $300 or $400 a year for anything for us. And, you know, even our medicines have went generic, so there's hardly any cost on that. Some of our medicine, we can actually buy, you know, two of our medicines for less than the deductible on the medicine or the copay. So when you look at all that in play, Ed, insurance companies are raking it in. The doctors are the ones losing. When it costs my doctor $40 because he's got to worry about liability insurance, he's got to hire employees, so he's got all the matching funds. You know all about that. Your employee costs, your workers' comp. You know, then you got to have health care for your own damn employees. All that adds up, and a doctor really truly can't make any money having to deal with the government red tape regulations.
Not the GPs. The GPs are, and my wife is a nurse, you know, just from casual conversation, the GPs mm-hmm. and the non-specialists will tell you straight up, they're barely making it work. You know, between your office and the amount of money on paperwork, the low payouts, student loans, you know. Probably a forced payment and stuff, maybe. But, come on, they're the smartest, you know, 0.1% in the nation.
Mm-hmm.
They've done, and on top of all that, they don't really even get to start making money until they're, like, in their 30s. You know, they get a couple years, they get a decade chopped off of their earnings, their prime earnings years.
Now the hospitals
get screwed.
Now the hospitals are raking it in. The hospitals make all kinds of money, and I tell you how they do it. They do it on every little thing they do. If they give you a gauze bandage that costs you 6 cents at a daggone Walgreens, it's going to cost you $16 at the hospital. If they give you a Tylenol pill for pain, and they do that quite frequently, they give you a Tylenol pill for pain or something, that's going to cost a minimum of $10 through the hospital. That's what they're going to charge you per pill, and you can get a bottle of 30 for $10 at any Walgreens. So, you know, they definitely jack the prices up. The hospitals make you out like bandits. And then, of course, the doctors and everything else practice there. They have to have, and that's the thing about specialists, too. For everybody who thinks these specialists are making money, they have to have hospital privileges. They got to pay for all of that stuff. They have to bill all this money to pay the hospital for the use of the room and all the other stuff. The hospitals actually lease this space. They don't actually just give it to you. So these doctors have to pay for everything they do through there, too. So if you're a specialist... If you're a specialist, then you've also got all these extra fees at the hospital. Since the hospitals are overinflated by 800 to 1,000%, in my opinion, then you're paying these overinflated hospitals to them. So, of course, you have to overinflate your money, your charges as a specialist. That's why the specialists seem to make so much more money. You know, it's just highway robbery. But, you know, I'm really not going to spend the whole show on it. I just thought it was pretty interesting because Kentucky hospitals are being told they're not going to be allowed to see patients. They're actually arguing about it. But for me, I wouldn't argue about it. Well, the hospitals probably are because they're still going to make money because they know they can bring their prices down. But the doctors can't bring the prices down, and that's a major situation. We are going to take a break real quick. Believe it or not, we actually do have some good news here, and you know, we'll tell you about that when we get back. So stay tuned, folks. 858-683-1326 is the number, 502-805-0334. Or for you guys in the listening queue, please hit that 100 dial pad. We'll bring you on air after the break. We'll be right back.
First impressions aren't the most important thing. They're the only thing. At Ernie's Print Shop, we'll produce what you need to represent your company professionally.
Ew.
Right now, you can get 1,000 full-color business cards, 1,000 4x6 postcards, or a 3x5 banner for just $60. You choose. Check us out at erniesprintshop.com. Ernie's Print Shop. Over 50 years, one source, one solution. erniesprintshop.com. 502-969-8585.
Being a victim of crime is no joke, but you do have options that can help you avoid becoming a victim. I'm Ed Springson of the My View Matters radio show, and on behalf of myself and co-host Ed Martin, I urge each of you to help us fight against crime. You can do your part by calling Crime Stoppers at 582-CLUE. Since 1982, Crime Stoppers has helped get over 23,000 criminals off the street with your help. Working together, we can make a difference to take our streets back. Please call Crime Stoppers at 582-CLUE, or you can visit them online at www.582clue.com. Remember, Crime Stoppers always offers up to a $1,000 reward. Get involved and help make a positive change in your neighborhood. Thanks.
Advertisers, here's a great way to reach a quality audience. Get heard on My View Matters and make some noise in the marketplace.
Email myviewmatters@aol.com for advertising opportunities. Make a sound.
Yeah, okay, folks, we're back. I know it was a little bit long break. Sometimes you get in that queue, man, and I tell you what, I just start running my mouth, and I don't want to stop. I apologize for that, but, you know, it's amazing. Welcome back to the Ed Springsteen Show, first of all, but it is amazing. I've got a story here that kind of surprised me, I'll be honest with you. This story is coming out, Coca-Cola. Everybody knows who Coca-Cola is, right?
Yeah.
Coca-Cola has announced that they're not going to spend any money on advertising. They have suspended all advertising spending. They actually started this on November the 18th. They're not going to spend any money on advertising. What they're going to do instead is take the money that they would spend on advertising and use it for relief efforts in the Philippines because the damage was done by Typhoon Haiyan. You know, we always talk about evil, greedy corporations. You know, the liberals just think all of them are evil and greedy corporations. They don't care about anything, right? But I think this is interesting because Coca-Cola has already donated $2.5 million in cash. They've spent nearly $600,000 in bottled water, and they also gave $1 million to the American National Red Cross to be used in the Philippines. I think this is a great example. If you want to talk about a public-private partnership, if you will, I think this is a great example of a corporation, a private corporation, helping the public. You know, the money they would normally spend on advertising and stuff like that, they're saying, no, we need to help somebody. We don't need to, you know, send this money out and spend it to try to make sure people buy more and more of it. Let's use this money in a positive way that's going to aid the community. And I think that Coca-Cola, this needed to be talked about because I think that Coca-Cola deserves a hell of a lot of credit for standing up and doing this. I don't know of any other company that has done that. Do you?
Not right off. I'm sure, you know, the hope I'm sure is that other companies follow suit. But, yeah, I mean, it's a form of indirect advertising, or as Preston Bates would say, unearned advertising. You know, they're getting it. We're talking about them now, and it's definitely a PR thing. I'm sure they did their, you know, sharpen their pencils and realized, you know, the return on an advertising dollar is, you know, whatever. They've got their markets here.
Right.
But what's important is they didn't have to do it. They didn't
No,
have
they
to
didn't.
Do it.
You're right. They didn't.
They could drag those advertising execs in and make them, let them use, you know, their villas in the Caymans or whatever. They could have
right.
just continued to play the game. They didn't have to do it. Nobody suggested to them that they do it. You know, nobody was saying, hey, you know, how about people do this? There was no social media push for it. They just did it. And for that, you know, not only is it really it's a wonderful effort, and the money is no doubt going to be, you know, slowly it's desperately needed,
mm-hmm.
but the initiative that comes with it, it's just somebody at Coca-Cola said, hey, let's do this. They hung up the suit for a little while and said, hey, let's be human. Let's do this, you know, and broke the mold. So it's like whoever that person is, good for them.
Well, and I agree with you. And I just think, you know, and you talk about them getting the free advertising, which is essentially what they are doing when we talk about it. I totally get that. But what's interesting here is this article didn't come from mainstream. This isn't something that mainstream is out there telling the whole world about.
Mainstream is pissed off about it. It's their money.
Well, I guarantee it. So they're not out there telling the whole world about it. This actually came from a place called Sunny Skies, SKYZ, sunnyskies.com. This is where I got this story at. So, you know, it's not like mainstream is jumping on board and giving them any free publicity for this, and they're going to gain from it anyway. Thank God we got people like us. We've got thousands of people that follow us everywhere we go. So, you know, they're getting us publicity out of that. But it is interesting. So it's not like they're getting a full benefit, if you will, of what their ad dollar would buy them. But they are getting something out of it because of people like us.
Yeah.
But I think well deserved because we can't sit here and continue to talk about all of these different things and evil corporations and not give credit where it's due. So,
yeah.
You know, I just wanted to mention it. I didn't want to make a show of it, but I want to mention it. But
yeah, and of course, you know, we're always ones to take a swipe at mainstream. So following through with
sure,
that, you know, like, there's probably a reason mainstream is not putting this all over the place because they're probably having their meetings going, oh, God, you know, we just lost X amount of millions of dollars with Coca-Cola. Mm-hmm. Crap, if this gets out, Pepsi is going to follow. Budweiser is going to follow. Maybe Ford, Chevy. They're probably thinking, good God.
Well, that's
you know,
it. They're not
the way the media is, they're probably thinking to themselves, good God, don't let this thing become a story. Pretty soon, all the big average, pretty soon Walmart will start doing it, and we're screwed.
Well, that's it. You know, I mean, they're definitely not using my business model because, you know, I mean, we bring people on air all the time, you know, politicians and stuff like that who don't spend any money with us. So, you know, they're not going to go down that road. But I thought it was pretty interesting. But there are a couple of national stories I really want to get into because this is one I just flat out love. And I know you know about this or you should. But J.P. Morgan Chase decided they were going to help take Twitter public last week. And as part of this big push to take Twitter public, last Wednesday night and Thursday night, they had scheduled a Twitter question and answer session with Vice Chairman James Lee. to no surprise to me, it's no surprise to me or most people I talk to, but they had to call off their question and answer session Wednesday evening, and they canceled Thursdays because they didn't like the questions that were being asked. So they wanted to have this live question and answer session with Vice Chairman James Lee and give you some idea what questions they were asked. This question came from a guy at Compare PM Prices. That's his Twitter handle, I credit. And his question was, what illegal deals did Jamie Dimon and the other big banks make with Obama at the closed-door meeting on October the 2nd, 2013? That was one of the questions. You've got another one here. Do you feel bad about systematically undermining democracy, and do you know what fiduciary duty is? You know, some more questions here. Does the sleeves wash off with a regular shower, or do you have to use something special like baby tears? This is the stuff that he was being asked. What will next Thursday's LIBOR rate be? You know, this is the thing. Cannot believe this. The thing that makes this so funny is J.P. Morgan Chase, of all people, I cannot believe that they actually thought that people were going to call in or you know, write in a question and answer session on Twitter, that they were going to write in with a valid question about J.P. Morgan Chase banking. After everything these clowns have done, to think that that was going to be some kind of a great PR move. The guy decided to put this together, probably been fired by now. What do you think about something like that?
Well, I think it's funny. I mean, on top of everything else, I mean, let's face it. You can, hey, just like receiving the hot tip broker people, they could have screened it. I mean, you know, put the big boy pants on, screen it. Technology would let you do that. You know, it doesn't have to go 100% live. You get a little 7-second delay kind of deal. So
the problem is,
to me, it's just funny, and it does fall into the category of, you know, given some of the things that their executives have said, given the profits, given the you know, the people are still bruised from and bleeding from the mortgage crisis, and you know, and you name it, the bailouts, everything. Like, really. You were
going to
open the lines, and you didn't see this coming.
Well, yeah, I mean, that's it. How they could even think about trying to do an open question and answer thing, even on Twitter. I mean, it's a good thing there weren't live phone calls. It was all Twitter, because if it would have been live phone calls in any way, shape, or form, they were in some extremely bad trouble. But I just couldn't get over the fact that they were actually sitting here trying to do this, because when you look at J.P. Morgan Chase, and you look at everything that's been going on, let's look at the past 3 years. You know, they just made one $13 billion settlement. You know, they just made a $100 million settlement in October of this year.
Yeah.
A $13 billion settlement with the Justice Department this month. You know, in September of 2013, $920 million. That was one. Another one for $389 million in September. I mean, just this year alone, they've paid out almost $17 billion in fines. 2012,
yeah.
They paid out a few billion dollars. 2011, They paid out a few hundred million. 2010, the same thing.
This is the history of these guys. People forget things, but it's like, yeah, like you said, that huge settlement, it's like, guys, it's hot off the griddle. I mean, and you thought it would be a good idea to go live. All right.
Well, that's it. That's it. I just thought that was so idiotic. I had to mention it. You know, they will not have any more question and answer sessions on Twitter. They did cancel the one that they had for Thursday. And, you know, even putting all that together, I mean, even they knew they screwed up, you know. So it was kind of funny.
Now, of course, the CEO and founder of Twitter, now you just got to wonder what he was thinking, because was he embarrassed for J.P. Morgan, or was he just quietly sitting there going, yep, that's the Twitterverse for you right there, baby.
Oh, I'm sure the guy that owns Twitter has not only become a billionaire, you know, he became a billionaire, but these guys helped, you know, so he's getting it from both ends. He's getting all that exposure, and he's getting money from these guys. So, I mean, that's a dream for a business, but I thought it was hilarious.
Oh, yeah.
But we have got to move on. I want to spend the last part of this hour on what I consider to be very disturbing news coming out of Washington. Barack Obama has once again sold America out. I don't see any other way to put that. I don't have any other way I can even comprehend saying that in a nice way. He made a deal with Iran over the nukes. And this is very, very disturbing. It really is, because if you look at what he agreed to, there's not one damn thing that we get out of this. What Iran gets out of this deal from Barack Obama is they get $3 billion in cash. They get $9.6 billion in gold. They get $5 billion in petrochemicals, $1.3 billion in automobiles. They get enough enriched uranium for one bomb. They get 3,000 new centrifuges, and they get their plutonium reactor. We got absolutely nothing, not a zip, zero. This is disturbing on all kinds of levels, because we know, we have reported here, as have other news outlets, that Valerie Jarrett has been secretly working with Iran for a year, holding all kinds of secret talks behind the scenes. For about a year. We know this. Valerie Jarrett is an Iranian. She was born in Iran. She is the senior advisor to President Obama. And in most cases, most people believe that she is the president de facto, that Obama is nothing more than a figurehead. She made a deal with one of the most extreme Muslim countries in the world, and Barack Obama gave it to her, gave it to Iran, and sold out Israel. As much as I say Israel can stand alone, we can't have it both ways. We can't have it both ways. This disturbs me greatly, Ed. How about you?
Well, you know, when they came out with a deal, I said, let's see how it fleshes out. Now, we are getting to put inspectors in there and things like that, and this is only a temporary deal. Now, to be honest, I'm always in favor of diplomacy. You know, I always think, even if they're just crazy, if you can put a few people in there to keep talking to the crazy people, you know, that's always better than walling them off. So I'm in favor of diplomacy. Gosh, you know, I've said it many times, and I'll probably keep saying it, and even after this fleshes out and 6 months later, we'll see what happens. But I just think our Secretary of State and our President are so overmatched when it comes to international diplomacy. Whether it's Hugo Chavez slapping them stupid, you know, with his rhetoric, whether it's Angela Merkel setting them down and telling them what's what, whether it's Vladimir Putin basically grabbing you by the short hair and saying, no, you're not going to hit Syria. You know, these guys are so overmatched. That's what frightens me. I honestly, you know, we don't know. If Iran starts to get out of control, there's there's more than enough people that are willing to take them out from everywhere, from the Saudis to the Israelis to, you know, anybody for that matter. The Russians could reel them out.
I don't think so.
But I just look at it and think, really? These guys, wow. I mean, they're just so overmatched that a country that's been isolated, that's not at the top of its diplomatic game, can basically get what they want.
This, I think, leads us to World War III. No holds barred, bar none. I really do. And I tell you, you can't sit here. This is another problem. I don't think that Obama is outmatched here. I really don't. I think Obama working with Valerie Jarrett is one of the biggest scheming teams that America has ever seen. I don't think they're outmatched. I think it's pretty intentional. And that's the disturbing part for me. I can't get...
I would agree with you if he was showing that he was an ace in anything else he's done internationally. But he has. He's been schooled. He's been lectured. He's been shown up. He's been neutered. You name it. This administration has had it handed to him as far as international diplomacy goes. Fortunately, you know, I guess if somebody else is slapping you around and you don't slap them back too hard, you don't end up in a war, you know. But yeah, and even Karzai now in Afghanistan is basically telling us how it's going to be. So, I do. I think if they were like really acing it on all other counts, and then gave this thing away like they may have done, then I would say yeah, something's up. But no, they have consistently had it handed to them.
I disagree because I think this is purely intentional. I really think that the president, Valerie Jarrett, who is de facto president, in my opinion, I think that this has been purely intentional. I agree with Prime Minister Netanyahu of Israel. It's something that I don't normally do because I've called him out many times on this show. But where Obama was praising this agreement as opening a new path toward a world that is more secure, Netanyahu said the world has become more dangerous because of this agreement. He says that what was agreed last night in Geneva is not a historic agreement. It's a historic mistake. And I agree with that. Here you've got Valerie Jarrett, Iranian-born. All right, and I can't get over that. As much as people would love me to get over that, I can't get over it. She's been working in secret for over a year now, behind the backs of everybody on this. She's been working in secret. We've been warned by all kinds of people over this that she's been working in secret on this. Nobody cared. Nobody wanted to pay attention to it. All right, what we've essentially done here, since Valerie Jarrett has been serving as basically the direct contact to Obama with all these secret meetings with Iran, we've undercut the duties of the Secretary of State. Not that I think John Kerry is a great Secretary of State. In fact, I think he's probably going to be worse than Hillary Clinton from a historical perspective. But we've lost all credibility everywhere, and this has to be by design. This administration cannot be this incompetent. There's just no way you can get to that level with everybody that's in power that incompetent. You can give yourself Obama, hell, give yourself Biden, but you can't get each and every person to be that incompetent and get through the system. So that only leads, if it's not incompetence or being inept, then it has to be intentional. For me, that's the way I look at it. So I'm having a major problem with this. Valerie Jarrett has got some backdoor deals that we're not even going to begin to understand, and I think that this is going to be very big going forward. Am I missing something here? Because I don't see it.
Oh, I just think, like I say, you think your way, I'll think mine. I just look at how many times it's a swing and a miss for this administration. And to me, it's like, oh, well, you know, I just can't get upset about it. I mean, this is like shooting pool with a guy who, you know, tells you how good he is and he can't make a simple bank shot. I'm just not seeing it. I see a lot of talk. I see a lot of posing, you know, as people back back when people tearing up at the hope and change and everything, and this is a new era for us. But in his own way, he's bumbling through it like George Bush, you know, George W. Bush, I should say. I just don't see it. I just don't see the, I don't see the direction. I just see too much of the same stuff, too much of the bumbling, too much of the getting shut down, whether it's by your own Congress or Vladimir Putin or Angela Merkel or anybody for that matter. I just see this administration, you know, the Chinese are basically calling us out ever so often on economics or something.
Well, the Chinese stood with the deal.
Going up in the front currency. I don't see people respecting us, and I don't see the administration at any point really doing anything to earn respect. They just keep fumbling from one misstep, and they're clawing. I think Obamacare failed. You know, it's like, okay, it's foundering. So much other stuff. The Syria, we want to go to war with Syria.
So this may be smoke and mirrors.
But it's falling apart. Everything keeps falling apart, and they just rather than fix what's falling apart, they just turn around and they just move real quick to the next thing.
So they went to this to get off of Obamacare, so that Obamacare don't have any 2014 repercussions. Let's go to the phones. I think this is Paul. Paul, what can we do for you, sir?
Is this the show where two heads are better than one?
Well, that's what we say, yes. What's going on, man?
Hey, listen, I think Ed Martin has indirectly stated that the very reason that the Democrat Party and the Obama campaign were picking on George the Shrub Bush for not getting the respect of the world, if you recall, that was a very important campaign item that the Obama campaign used in an effort to discredit Bush. Well, ladies and gentlemen, I would suggest, this is kind of what Ed Martin was saying, is that we still don't have the respect of the world. We just have a different bad actor in the White House. And his whole staff are more incompetent than the George Bush staff. Stop and think about it. As incompetent as Bush might have been, and I'm not a big fan of George Bush's second term. I thought he was okay in the first term. George Bush was at least a governor before he became president. He had executive experience. Obama had zero executive experience, and all of these pointy-headed intellectuals that he brought on board have damn little, if any, executive experience either. In other words, all of these intellectuals are using the United States as a case study and as a test tube experiment, if you will. They really don't know for sure that their ideas will work. But, you know, let's give it a shot. It's worth experimenting.
But I don't see that. I see this.
You'll see what?
I see this because I don't see anything about this administration because of the lack of executive experience, and uses that as an excuse for their failures. I think this is an arrogant administration who has their own desire, their own agenda, that they are tied up, and I really firmly believe this, and call me a conspiracy theorist all day long, but I believe that this agenda by these people is to aid the Muslim Brotherhood and the downfall of America. It's a conspiracy theory. I agree. I'm not even going to argue that point with you. But I think this is purely intentional, and I think this administration has been arrogant enough to realize they can do anything they wanted to. They laid the foundation in the first daggone term, and in the second term, you've got a president who is a lame duck president. He can do anything he wants to do and don't have to worry about it. That's exactly what the mindset is. This is what they were building for. They didn't care about that first term. Him, Valerie Jarrett, and the rest of these people that they have installed, and I do say installed, it's not a lack of executive experience. This was planned. This was set up. This was the plan all along. Get to the second term and then start the meltdown. I don't know if I'm wrong or right, but let me tell you, when you talk about not being respected around the world, and that was a selling point for Obama when he was running against Bush, we know there's no respect here. He just sold out John Kerry. John Kerry has to be either viewed now at any negotiation as totally incompetent, totally inept, he's a fool, or all of the above. There is no way around that because Valerie Jarrett has been playing an end around underneath John Kerry's nose with Iran for a year. How can that be lack of executive experience? That's intentional.
Well, I think going off of what Paul says, you know, he said the lack of executive and administrative experience. And you say there's an arrogance. Well, those two go hand in hand in my world. You know, somebody comes in.
In any case, I'll agree.
With no executive experience, you just basically look at it and go, oh, yeah, puppy dogs, rainbows, and unicorns and shit skittles. I can do this because I believe it, you know, and doggone it, people like me kind of thing. Where if you have executive experience, a lot of times the first thing you do, and I know it's one of the first things I do when presented with a situation, is you go, yeah, crap, this is going to be tough. You know,
mm-hmm.
This is not going to be easy. You know, if you have executive experience, you generally don't come in with arrogance running throughout. You may have some cockiness. You're going to need it to say, yeah, I can fix this. But you don't come in going, oh, yeah, I can fix this. People are going to love me. And this is not too difficult. But, yes, I think that's what we've got with this administration. I think they want to pose. They want to read their
– let's look at the big picture.
They want to read their scripts. They want to sound smarter than George W. Bush with his twang. And they think that's good enough. And it's not. I'm sorry. You know, a lot of these people in the world that they're dealing with, I think they thought, well, we can make them like us. It's like, no. Okay, check it out. The Iranians might actually be smarter than you, and they're definitely more ruthless than you are, okay?
We are on overdrive right now. We're going to stay here for a minute, and I'll tell you why. Because here's the thing, okay? We know... One of the questions that's being asked of anybody now that's in the upper echelons of the military is, will you fire on an American citizen? That has been asked forever. We know this because we've got a bunch of generals who are telling us this. Since last year and through this year, that's been part of a litmus test that's been given to our American military officers. Would you fire on an American citizen? If you say no, then you're fired, period. And we know this because we have a lot of these retired officers coming forward and telling us that this is a question that they're asked and warning us that President Obama is preparing for war against the U.S. In October of this year, just last month, Diane Sawyer, she did a piece telling us about the 9 generals. You heard me right. The 9 senior generals, senior officers that were fired from the military just that week. We've had dozens of senior military officials fired this year from this administration at the same time that they're making behind-closed-door deals with Iran. That's not coincidental. If you've served in the military and know anything about the military mindset, you see this and you realize that what's going on. Now these generals are coming forward and telling us that President Obama is preparing for war against the U.S. These are guys that would know. I mean, President Obama doesn't even talk about the U.S. military. He refers to the military as my military. He calls it my military. Every dictator in the world has referred to their nation's military as my military. That's what Obama refers to our military as. My military this, my military that. That's not coincidental. That's the way he views it. We have got some generals who have gotten together, and they are calling for the resignation of Obama and some congressional leaders because of political purge of hundreds of senior military officers. And they are creating a citizens commission to go after the Obama administration actions based on national security and economic concerns. General Paul E. Vallely and Air Force Brigadier General Charles Jones have put together something, an 8-point paper that they call the Americans Project. I want you guys to Google the Americans Project and read it. But this is very interesting. Why in the world do you think that we're getting rid of all of our senior leadership? We've decided that if you answer the question, no, you won't fire on an American citizen, we're going to fire you, by a president who commonly refers to the military as his military and sends his Iranian-born right arm over to Iran to make a deal on nuclears that doesn't benefit us in any way, shape, or form. And this isn't coincidental. This is lack of executive experience. I don't get it.
It could be both. You know, it could be both. Your conspiracy scenario and the lack of executive experience aren't necessarily the same thing, nor are they going to manifest themselves the same way. You could have a Machiavellian kind of guy in the body of Barack Hussein Obama, and he can multitask. Evil can multitask just as well as good. So
sure. I find that interesting because at the end of the day, when you talk about a conspiracy, all conspiracy means is there's an agreement between two or more people to commit a crime at some time in the future. I think that there is a conspiracy between Obama, Valerie Jarrett, and a whole host of others to commit a crime, and that crime is perpetrated on the American people. That's the conspiracy for me. They want to call me the conspiracy theorist. I'm not planning on committing a crime. I'm not committing a conspiracy. I'm telling you what the conspiracy is. It's just a major, major flux for me. I don't get any of this. You don't fire your senior leadership and put yourself in that position and then piss off the only ally you have in the Middle East and Israel. Whether I agree with Israel and whether I think we should be putting all our resources into Israel is an entirely different subject than leaving Israel to stand alone and funding their enemy when at the same time you're trying to shake their hand in public and tell you they're your ally. There is a major situation going here that everybody wants to ignore.
Well, I think, Ed, that you're also jumping to a conclusion that is not a foregone one, and that being that even if somebody like Obama were to command the United States military to fire on American citizens, that doesn't necessarily mean that it's going to happen, A. B, if it should happen, that doesn't necessarily mean that the troops are going to remain loyal and committed to, quote, this commander-in-chief lookalike that we've got. And C, that's also not to say that those people who left the United States military because they failed to agree with Obama's desire to have them fire on American citizens, that's not to say that we won't get some type of clandestine force in place. It's not a foregone conclusion, and I really do, in one respect, I have a great deal of faith in the American people and in our heritage. We are a very independent-minded folk, okay? In spite of all of the sheep-like behavior that this younger group has exhibited in supporting this Obama guy, I'm convinced that when it comes right down to it, they will, in fact, fight for their toys. They will fight for their livelihood. We have it ingrained in us. Unlike what happened over in Europe, where they had hundreds and hundreds of years of feudalism and serfdom, we didn't have that here. So I have got a lot of faith that our heritage will rescue us, even from this dictator called Obama, even from him, no matter what he does.
Yeah, my problem is it's not just Obama. It's the government machine at work. But we are out of time. Paul, thank you so much for the call, and I appreciate it. Eric, final thoughts.
Final thoughts. I usually, and everybody knows that, I generally try not to be the conspiracy theorist. And in this case, I just tend to not be. I just, if there were any massive victories, anything that they could actually tout as some unmitigated success, I would say they were capable. But if what we're saying is that the reason, you know, that they are doing this and the reason they're doing it, the reason we have to fear it is because they failed at everything. I don't know. It just seems like nonlinear logic to me. It's like I say, if they had nailed it on a couple other things and they could actually leverage it to where they could say, hey, look, see, we've done all this stuff so well, give us a little more control. But it seems like everything they do, whether internationally or domestically, nothing ever really works out as planned. So there's just so little faith, whether it comes from the international community or the domestic community. And as far as talking about firing on people, I just look at the demographic of the U.S. military and the fact that we have a volunteer force, and I just think that we're at a place where they simply, the soldiers won't. And if some commanding officer tells a soldier to fire on, you know, a crowd of people, I think the first bullet is going to be for that commander. I just don't think the U.S. soldiers will do it. I know people might want to draw up Kent State every once in a while, but I just don't think, you know, and I know a lot of them, I just don't think these people, they just don't have the faith in the leadership. A lot of guys I know that are in the military are just doing it to get a college, you know, get a college education. They're not going to do it. I just have all the faith in the world in the individual that's in the U.S. military. It's not going to happen.
At the very least, I find this president and his entire cabinet, including Eric Holder and Valerie Jarrett, his vice president, Joe Biden. You can throw a few others in there, too, if you want, including Harry Reid. I find every one of them...
I got to go.
Working. See you, man. I find every one of them working as a conspiracy to defraud the American public. They are working together in a conspiracy to defraud the American public. It's very disturbing to me what is going on with this administration. I know we hear that all the time, and I know that people are going to accuse me of being this right-winger and all this other crap. I don't care how I'm labeled, as long as you wake up to the reality that there is something majorly wrong with the direction of this country and the current leadership, and that in this second term, it is readily apparent that Barack Obama and his staff will go drop to any level necessary to destroy the American way of life. I don't think there can be any doubt about that. We can look at failures in the Affordable Care Act, the HAMP program, the other things that were supposed to help the less fortunate American citizens. We can disagree on those all day long. But when you look at tragedies and the real issues here, you've got Fast and Furious, the IRS gate, Benghazi, and the list goes on and on and on and on and on. You can't be that incompetent. You can't blame your lack of executive experience. It defies logic. For me, the only logical conclusion is that we have an intentional work going on here to destroy America. We've got hundreds of senior military officers being purged out of the military, and we're making deals with Iran that will benefit only Iran. Something doesn't smell right, folks. It doesn't pass the smell test. All the other things that Barack Obama has done to date, do with what you will. But when you're selling out your nation's security for some end game that you and your advisors only know about, you're defrauding the American people of something that we have a right to. We have a right to feel secure in our homes and our person and our possessions and on our properties. We have a right to feel secure within the borders of the United States. Barack Obama just jeopardized that security. That's not a conspiracy theory, folks. That's a fact. And when you wake up and realize how bad you've been duped, just pray to God that it's not too late to save this grand old experiment that might one day be gone called the U.S. of A. That's it for tonight. Tomorrow night, 7 o'clock, Ed Martin will be back here with me. Dale the Truth, of course, joins us on Wednesday and Thursday, and our good friend Kim Moman with Liberty Unbridled on Sunday night. Of course, also 7 o'clock right here. Folks, have a great night. Thanks so much for listening, and we'll talk to you soon. Take care.